You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 324. Today is Sunday, February 14, 2016, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt. And happy Valentine's Day to everyone, especially to our understanding wives. We record on Valentine's night. All right, so guys, a special show tonight with
all the focus, huge,
on the front office. We have interviews with Braves President John Schuerholz, Vice President of Sales and Marketing Derek Schiller, and General Manager John Coppolella. So we'll play each interview and then talk about what we heard. And first up, Team President John Schuerholz. We are joined by Braves President John Schuerholz. John, thanks for your time this evening.
My pleasure, Steve.
All righty. So, John, with this part of the rebuild complete, and by all accounts, it's been incredibly successful. This many of the team's prospects are in the top 100. The farm system's regarded as one of the tops in baseball now. So with that in mind, what's number one on the list for what you're most excited about for 2016, and what keeps you up most at night about 2016?
Well, the most exciting thing for me is to see the health and well-being of our pipeline of talent, as you suggested in your first question. I mean, we had as an organization, we had taken our eye off that ball, and that is the secret sauce of any winning organization, any consistently winning organization. If as you ask anybody who's been involved, as I have been with several organizations with consistent winning, having an opportunity to get in the postseason play every year, it's about homegrown players and having that pipeline as robust and as filled with a major league championship caliber players as you can. And under the leadership of John Hart, our president of baseball operations, and John Coppolella, our general manager, that turnaround has been remarkably positive and quite quick.
Yeah, and so what keeps you up at night the most thinking about this coming year?
Is it quick enough? Because it's been too long, even if it's been just a couple of years, for the Braves not to have a team that can compete and contend. And that's for an organization that has the second most wins in the last 25 years in all of Major League Baseball, the Yankees being first. For only $1 billion more in salaries that they've paid. That spoke to consistency, and it spoke to our commitment. It spoke to the reliability that our fans were able to have and the robust number of people who kept coming in the ballpark year after year after year because they expected their team to be exciting, to be fun, to be competitive, and to get with a chance to get in postseason play. So that's what keeps me up. I want to get that turned around completely. So that that we could go again to our fans and say, you can expect your Braves to be a very exciting team, a fun team to watch, and one that you can reasonably expect to be in the playoffs every year.
John, you mentioned the front office taking its eye off the ball. I want to ask you a little bit more about that. With the benefit of hindsight, what mm-hmm. would the front office have done differently to have, to have kept the team's farm system from getting to the state it was at the end of 2014?
Well, I mean, just to continue to have it grow, and that's a function of scouting and in the draft and decisions made in that process. Player development is a sister product that is important as well, because with the pipeline of young talent coming into the organization through that draft and through Latin American signings, and you put them in the hands of a very talented sculptor, if you will, of young raw talent, and that group turns them into finished and molded beautiful statues that can play at the major league level and win championships. So it goes hand in hand, and that's what happened. And when there was a bit too much attention paid to acquiring players at the major league level, and probably not enough of a focus on the secret sauce of consistent excellence in baseball, and that is the homegrown player.
So, John, does this year's payroll have any bearing on 2017? In other words, like, if money is not spent this year, for example, creating more offense at third base or second base, does that allow for greater payroll flexibility in 17?
No, because as we plan our move to SunTrust Park at the end of 16 season, we expect, and rightfully so, our revenue streams to be more robust once the fans get to see what SunTrust Park looks like and find their way there easily a number of times, not only from Atlanta area, but our southeastern region, Braves country, that takes in about six to seven states. We expect our revenue streams to be more robust, and we always invest our income into the continued building of our team. And we'll do that. And money alone is not the answer, as you well know. But money alone combined with brains, and we have those brains, as I said earlier, with Hart and Cumpalella, handling those functions for us. I feel real good about what the future holds. And I think, not to skip over 16 so quickly, but 16 is going to be an exciting year. I think John Cumpalella and John Hart have made some great trades and acquisitions. And that our 16 team is going to be more exciting. It could be younger. We're going to see Olivera, see how he does in left field. We'll see if Adonis Garcia can continue his swinging the bat like he did for us last year and how he continued to do all through the winter league in Puerto Rico. It'll be a good and exciting year.
Yeah, I agree that the offense should be better with Inciarte and Akbar at short and maybe Jace Peterson being healthy. Do you expect the team to win more games in 16 than last year?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, my enthusiasm has me answer that question. Yes, I think we will win more games. I mean, I think, as you just mentioned, the Inciarte, the Ibar, Pierzynski back, although we don't expect AJ to give us the same years as he did last year, same year he gave us last year. It was a remarkable production for a guy catching and at his age. Olivera is a key. I mean, if Olivera comes on, and we think Markakis will have more power since he's a year out of the surgery that he had. Just after we signed him last year, we knew he had the neck issue, and we got that fixed. But great hitter, great contact hitter. We expect to get more power out of him. I think Freddie Freeman bounces back. I mean, I saw Freddie at the Fan Fest the day you and I talked, and Freddie looks like $1 million. And I have, you know, high hopes for him. So I'm excited. We have good young pitching. How quickly they advance, how quickly they develop their skills to the fullest and allow them to pitch through games and get more wins is important too. Our starting pitching and our bullpen have to do the job, and if we get that and some offense, it could be a fun year.
So, John, I'm sure there are many financial models and assumptions about the revenue streams in 2017. Is the front office aware of what the payroll increase will be, and can you share any of that with us?
No, not for 17. We're not certain what that'll be. A byproduct of some things, how we do this year and how our business of the organization develops over the course of 16 and into the winter of 16, preparing for 17. So, but we always, as I said, what I can leave with our fans about that question is that what we earn in revenue, profitability, goes back into the construct of this team, always has and always will. And that's been our operating model and motto, and we'll continue to do that.
All right, John, I want to ask a question about the January owners' meetings. There was this topic raised, concern from some owners about the perceived tanking of teams, and I know that the Braves were mentioned in that group of teams given the rebuild. Do you think there's validity to that conversation?
None at all. And anyone who knows me personally, and now in my 51st year as a Major League Baseball executive and a one-time general manager for 26 years, and affiliated with many championship teams and a couple of world championship teams, in fact. No, we wouldn't think of tanking. What we were doing is appropriately making adjustments so that we could put ourselves into that position, which I shared with you and your listeners, that we every year could, as the season begins, be expected to compete and have a chance to get in the playoffs and maybe win another World Championship. We did not have that opportunity with, if we had continued following the same construction format that was in place before we changed our leadership in baseball operations. And that's what we decided to do. We did it intentionally. We did it knowingly. We didn't believe we had a legitimate chance to compete with what we had. And living with one foot in the world of trying to compete and the other foot in the world of trying to rebuild, will assure you you'll stay right in that position and that posture forever. So we made a commitment to doing this right. And I can't commend John Hart and John Coppola enough for the job they've done. And I believe we're in a far stronger place, and it will continue to grow. We're not done doing the things that need to be done. We are going to try to get to the point where 14 consecutive division championships is broken by the Atlanta Braves in 15 years from now.
All right, John, I'd like to end with this. Back to your days as Braves GM, I'd love to hear what trade or signing you're most proud of and which one you'd like to have back.
Well, there are a lot of them in the have back column, but the one signing, of course, is I think legendary, not in my words, but in a lot of other people's words, the signing of Greg Maddux as a free agent. It probably goes down as the best signing by an organization ever in the history of free agency. And you, Steve, and a number of the fans out there could probably list more in the wish I could have back category, but acquisition of Fred McGriff. We didn't have a fourth place hitter at the time, and everybody in our lineup, from David Justice to Ronnie Gant to Mark Lemke, tried to be a cleanup hitter, and they weren't getting the job done. They weren't playing to their natural abilities. And once we were able to make the trade for Freddie McGriff, everything was set up perfectly then, and it all clicked. And it came together. So, there have been some trades that I've made that I wish I didn't, but I'll leave those unnamed because there'll be too many of them to start naming them now.
Okay, fair enough, John. John, we appreciate your time. Good luck the rest of the off season. I hope spring training gets off to a great start, and we look forward to talking to you again.
I do as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, John. Bye bye. All right, so Ham, what'd you take away from the interview?
The main feeling I got is I feel good about it. I liked what he had to say. I thought he was relatively honest. I did get a sense that he's tired of getting attacked about where the team is. He felt a slight bit defensive on some of the things that were going on. But I think that I liked it. I liked that. I liked what he said about the payroll. It's still sort of vague and cagey, but at least it was the most, I guess, honest answer we've gotten about payroll yet, or at least what I've read.
Yeah, funny. I my reaction to the payroll thing, and we asked Copy about it too. We'll get to that later in the show. But I was surprised he said that not spending money this year would not increase or provide any money for next year.
But I guess, if you think about it, that makes sense, though. I mean, I guess it's a year by year. I guess they don't store it away and say they're going to up it next year. You know, I mean, I think it's just a year by year basis, and they look at money coming in and sort of P&L, and that's the way it goes.
Well, I thought back to the payroll, I thought what was interesting was his saying, well, we don't really know what the revenue increase will be with the new stadium, so we don't really know what the increase in payroll will be, which makes sense. I have trouble believing it. In that Liberty Media is going to want to have to make a splashy winning team for the first year in the new stadium, don't you think? I know it's just a numbers game for them and we're just another asset, but it seems like there'd be a little special, sort of attention paid to the payroll and opening in the new stadium.
Yeah.
Well, I think Curtis, you're wrong.
Yeah, and I also think that, if Schurholz comes out and says, we know we're going up 20%, something like that, and they don't – I don't think he really wants to commit himself to anything yet, even on our lowly little show. So I think he's holding the cards close to his vest. But I get it. I get, you know, if you bring in more money, you're gonna be able to invest it.
Yep.
And that's how, you know, that's how businesses are run. And certainly with Liberty Media at the helm, that's how this team is run. So I don't know.
Curtis, how about you? What'd you hear?
Well, I guess if we're just sticking on this one topic, when I heard it the first time, I reached out to you guys specifically about this. And the language, the interview that Coppola did prior to the one that he did with you, I think we need to accept the fact, which they're really hoping, and they really are constructing a team. You can see it that they're filling through all these moves. They've really been able to fill quite a team. I mean, really, they whack maybe one position that I can think of, a catcher. And I know that one of the guys that they're looking at through the international signing is, you know, one of the 16-year-old super rated catching prospects out of Central America or South America. But I mean, you figure with Austin Riley, you have a third baseman, you've got Swanson and Albies second and short, obviously Freddie. Maybe you've got to get another outfielder somewhere, but you have Malik, you have, oh, I guess you got Inciarte, and you've got Oliveira. So, I mean, you've really got the team in place. So I don't think they're going to be spending a lot of money on payroll. I just don't see it happening. I think that one of the major reasons they've done all these moves, which is great that they've stockpiled all this talent, is because they – don't want to spend a lot of money.
They're going to remain a mid-market payroll.
I would say even lower tier payroll. And I just think that that's where they're going. And I think people need to expect that. I mean, I, like so many fans, really was anticipating that because they were going to have all these new revenue streams coming in when they moved to SunTrust Park, that they were going to spend a lot more money. And we've said it 1,000 times, just spending money, you don't – we're not suggesting they just go out and sign every overpriced free agent and spend $200 million on David Price or something like that. But, I mean, you have to fill gaps. Every single one of these players that they've brought in, they're not going to hit, you know? I mean, and I mean that in the
in the bigger sense, yeah.
Yes, in the grand scheme of things. But because some of these players are not going to pan out to be great players. But you don't have to have an all-star. You can have Mark Lemke, you know? You just have to have some guys in the lineup. But I think that they want to keep it cheap, and I think that that's why one of the main reasons they've done all these moves. So I really picked that up from Shoreholtz a lot in that.
So, Curtis, you think both 2016 as well as beyond keep it cheap?
I do. I mean, Coppola said it in that other interview. I forget who it was. It was with Mark Bradley or Jeff Schultz, one of those guys. And it was – I mean, he basically was saying that they're not going to – go out and that, you know, sign these, that big money free agents are not going to be, that's not in their game plan. And it didn't sound like it was not in their game plan like next year. I mean, this year, it sounds like it's not in their game plan as an organizational theme, that is not something that they are going to do, which again, on paper, I don't have a huge problem that they don't chase every single guy, but I do, you know, if you're filling a spot, sometimes you got to spend money. I appreciate that you can fill spots with guys like Tyler Flowers and things like that. But Tyler Flowers is not the guy that's going to take you from a team that loses in the first round of the playoffs to a team that wins the world championship next year.
All right, guys, let's move on to VP of Sales and Marketing, Derek Schiller. We are joined by Braves Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing, Derek Schiller. Derek, thanks for your time today.
Absolutely.
So, Derek, we'll get to 2016 in a moment, but how much of your day-to-day focus right now is on 2017?
Well, we have a great team of people that are working on everyday things that involve 2016 and all the things that it takes to put on a season. So a few of our executives, including myself, are spending a lot of our time on SunTrust Park and the Battery Atlanta mixed-use development that's right adjacent to it. So I would say maybe more than 80% of my time right now is going towards the new development and the new ballpark.
All right, so back to 2016. It's a fun and interesting slate of bobbleheads this season. I know there's a lot of talk about the Freddie and Chipper one, but I may be most excited about Skip and Pete. It's also the first year I remember where no current player is being featured alone. So, I can understand reasons for that. Do you, in the season, leave a slot open for a TBD bobblehead? So when, like, a Markakis or a Whistler have a great first half, you can, you know, get one of those in for the second half? How does that work?
We definitely do. In fact, last year, just to use that as an example, we actually had a fan vote with the open slot for a bobblehead. And so we allowed our fans to kind of tell us which ones and which player that they would most want to have. And I would expect that we would probably try to do something very similar. You know, as we assembled this team for this year, going into it, there were a little bit of, or perhaps even a lot of uncertainties about who the breakout players might be. And so giving us that flexibility allows us to kind of take advantage of that. We know that we're going to have some of the veterans and the guys that have been with us that come back, but there are others that maybe develop over the course of the season.
Sure. So Derek, I can picture Freddie Freeman, Julio Teheran, Nick Markakis are players that you will focus on during the course of the year. Are there plans to feature other players in other ways this year, and will that maybe change, you know, aside from the bobbleheads?
Well, I think first and foremost, this year being the final season of Turner Field, we want to respect and pay homage, if you will, to all the great things that have happened at Turner Field over the years. We've been there this year, it'll be 20 years, and we've had a lot of great moments, and so we'll celebrate some of those. And then obviously, as the year progresses, we'll certainly have big moments that will happen undoubtedly. So we want to celebrate those as well. But one of the special things that we are doing this year is having a countdown where each and every game, all 81 regular season home games, will have, if you will, a special celebration tied to that, where we'll have an actual countdown with a number on that representing how many games left at Turner Field. And we intend to have a lot of the current and former players, as well as others, help us tear down, if you will, the number signifying that particular game.
So there's going to be a physical number somewhere up in the on the field, or how's that going to work?
That's right. And sometime probably around the fifth inning, when the game becomes a complete game, we'll tear down that number representing whatever game that is, and then signifying how many more regular season home games are remaining at Turner Field.
Gotcha. So I understand celebrating the past. There's a lot of the future that's going on right now with the Braves, sort of in this singular way of, you know, the farm system jumping from bottom five to top five in the course of a year. Will you make reference to or celebrate in any way some of the big notable names coming up, the Swansons, the newcomers, or do you leave that for when they get here?
No, actually, it's a really good point. And I think this year, probably more than any other in the past several, we've got so many young talent that we want to try to educate our fans about, that we are going to start to bring those into the fold. A little bit of a departure from years past, where we're only, if you will, really focusing on the Major League Baseball roster. I think you'll start to see us do a lot with celebrating and trying to get information out there in the hands of our fans about those players that come up, some of the guys that you mentioned, as well as others. You know, just by reference, you know, even the Major League roster, there's so many uncertainties about it, and there's so much information that we're going to have to bring out there. And, you know, just looking at the starting rotation, for example, there might be two or three spots that are firm, if you will, going into the spring training season. And so there's probably six or seven other guys that are competing for those regular, for those other spots. So, you know, that brings a whole nother dynamic into play as far as how we talk about the roster both today and in the future. And then there's a couple guys that deserve a little special attention, not the least of which is Dansby Swanson, as you mentioned, who came over from the Arizona trade. And he, being a local hometown kid, who obviously was the number one draft pick, that brings a little bit more attention to probably him than even some of the others. But we'll try to get all the guys that we think are going to make it to the major leagues, we'll try to get them all out there.
Derek, I picture how the organization, or I try to picture it, how they manage to keep all the emails, the meetings, the agreements under wraps about the move to SunTrust. I imagine it's almost a story of its own. Was there a code name the front office was using? Were meetings held in specific places? Because I imagine the front office was meeting with a bunch of Cobb officials, for example, for months. And if someone took notice of that, they would have started asking questions. But there was no news of any kind. How did you guys do it?
Well, there was a very small group of people, small group of us that knew about the project, first and foremost, even within the walls of Turner Field, within our offices. We kept it very, very confidential. All those meetings were closed door, and they didn't have a moniker to them. But when we started sharing some information back and forth with some of the key people that were outside of our office, for instance, the Cobb Chamber of Commerce, who was extremely helpful throughout the process and helping us investigate and understand the opportunities, as well as a few others. Yeah, we did actually have some code names. Kind of at some point in time, you're probably right, it is a good story for a book. I mean, we actually had two primary code names. We ended up changing one because we thought maybe we had been compromised.
Wow.
And there was a lot of discussion about how we keep things private and secret, if you will, especially once the deal was handshaked and before we had made the announcement. There were some great stories about how we thought the information had gotten out there and that we were compromised, but we actually made it the last day when we controlled the message and controlled the announcement.
Can you share what that code name was?
So we had two. One was Project Hornet, and one was Project Intrepid, and there are reasons behind that. I don't want to necessarily go into, but there's some good stories behind why we named those two particular code names.
All right. Well, Derek, promise that you'll put the reasons behind those names in the book, however.
Sure. Okay. Sure, absolutely.
All right. Very good. So approval came down for the pedestrian bridge by the Cobb County Commissioners in January, which is great news for the future, for sure. I imagine it doesn't help 2017. You know, Derek, we've heard a lot about ideas about the bus routes and like a tram system a la Disney World. Can you provide the latest vision of how the traffic will work to the stadium? There's certainly concern about it.
First, I'm actually going to correct you a little bit. So the pedestrian bridge, which actually includes enough room and enough space for what we call a circulator, in effect, a trolley, a bus, a shuttle system. We're still hopeful, optimistic that that's going to be done for opening day of 2017.
Oh, okay.
The design is relatively far advanced at this point in time. The approvals have been set. So we've gotten approvals from the funding sources, which include the Cumberland CID, the Community Improvement District, as well as others, and then final approval and sign-off from Cobb County. And so with that, we are progressing very fast. The county is. And we're still very optimistic. Believe it or not, the structure itself is not that complex. And so once the design is done, it's really a matter of just getting the thing built. And we think there are some efficiencies with some of the other work that's going on out there that should help us do that. As far as the rest of the transportation improvements, we're all very excited about what that area of town has in the way of access. You know, there's just to give comparison, Turner Field has essentially two ways in and out, primarily via Hank Aaron. And most people who've been to Turner Field realize that there's more than 80% of our parking spaces that are north of the stadium. And so you have to get to those parking spaces and then make your way to the ballpark. That causes a lot of pedestrian vehicular conflict, and it's the reason why, in addition to just two ways in and out, there's so much trouble getting in and out of Turner Field. Compare that to Centrist Park, where there's about 14 different roadways, ingress-egress paths, into the ballpark. And then also the fact that parking is spread in effect all 360 degrees, and fans are coming from, for all effect, 360 degrees. So you're coming from now, as opposed to 85% of our fans coming from north of the ballpark, there should be a much more equal distribution of where you're coming from. That and the access will certainly help provide some better enhancements as far as getting to the ballpark and leaving the ballpark. And then, as I mentioned, the transportation improvements are pretty enormous in that area of town, some of which were caused by our project and some of which were already in place. Good example, the one that's in place that's going to really help is the managed lanes off of 75 and 285, the reversible, they help. They're doing a diverging diamond interchange on Windy Hill. They're widening Cobb Parkway. And then a lot of other things, including resignalization of most of the major traffic areas around there, to hopefully make the flow in and out of there much, much better than it exists at Turner Field, and certainly hopefully optimized for baseball games as well as non-baseball games when you've just been for the Battery Atlanta.
Yeah, the transportation map on Braves.com, Derek, talks about the 14 access points and other improvement items like intersections and widened highways, sidewalks to be added. Is that stuff coming in phases, or is that intended to be done by opening day?
I would say the large majority of it will be done by opening day. There are certain projects, just because of the scale of them, that will take beyond opening day. The Windy Hill diverging diamond is an example. I believe the completion date is not April of 2017, it's sometime thereafter. Even the managed lanes, which is, you know, a close to a 30-mile project up and down 75, which most people who've traveled up and down 75 or near that intersection of 75 and 285 will probably understand. That's a massive project, elevated, reversible lanes up and down that highway system. That won't be done until 2018. So there's some of this that will be phased, but some of the key things that will be done will certainly be done by opening day. And we're certain that with Cobb County's help, the police department that's part of this, as well as our studies that we've got going on, and a lot of the traffic and transportation management that we're doing, including making sure that you're optimized going into parking lots, and we've got the best available systems to do that. We think it's going to be a much more enhanced process and much easier efficient to get in and out of the ballpark. And by the way, I just should mention,
sure,
you know, I think a lot of people will either come early or stay late, which obviously helps with the distribution of the patterns of when people are coming and leaving, particularly because there's something now to do in and around the ballpark with all the shops and restaurants and bars and other activities.
So, Derek, a bit of a soap opera broke out this week around the Hank Aaron statue in the Atlanta Fulton County Recreation Authority. And it, you know, over the last few days, it has changed sort of daily. How do you think this ultimately plays out?
Well, it's a little disappointing that, you know, something that's iconic as Hank Aaron's statue has in effect become a little bit of a pawn, a little bit divisive. And, you know, I think the Atlanta Braves, more than anything, what we've been trying to do and what we've stated unequivocally from day one is we wanted to respect the wishes of Hank Aaron. I've had many conversations with Hank about the topic. I think the most important thing is whatever he thinks is the best thing to do with that statue. I think that all of us should respect, including the city of Atlanta and Fulton County, who control the Atlanta Fulton County Recreation Authority. Now, what ultimately happens, I can't say for certain today, but I know that there's going to be a resolution to this very, very soon. We don't want this to be a divisive issue. We have no ill will and nothing, you know, regardless of our move, we have nothing against the city of Atlanta. In fact, quite the contrary. We are embracing that. Our jerseys and our uniforms will still say Atlanta across the chest. We still are an Atlanta team. If you ask anybody from in and around the metro area, no matter where they're from, Cobb, Gwinnett, Cherokee, Clayton, most people will tell you they're from Atlanta. And we are representative of Atlanta and very much want to do that for every day moving forward.
All right, Derek, final question. A great deal has been announced about the park already, seating capacity, restaurants. We heard recently there will be some quirky sort of fence height things going on in the outfield. I imagine there are more surprises to come. Can you point us toward any of them?
Well, there's a few things that I think are really interesting. First and foremost, for those people that are coming first and foremost for the baseball games, which I hope most everybody are, the sight lines are going to be far superior. You know, we've got a much more intimate setting. The middle deck and upper deck are cantilevered over each other, so it creates all the seats become closer to the field. And then if you start to look around at the various amenities, I think we have something in the ballpark for everyone. You know, more than 50% of our fans are fans that come as families, with kids, parents and kids coming together. And that's really important. We want to make sure that we still are a family sport. We still are very much embracing that social outing aspect of going to a baseball game, going to see your favorite Braves team play. And so we will have things in there, for example, that are very family-oriented. For the kids, we have a significant kids play area, a zone that's going to have a terrific amount of activities, much more enhanced than we have at Turner Field. And then for other segments, not the least of which are people who like to socialize and perhaps have a beer, meet up with people. You know, we have the Chop House, which will be coming back in a bigger fashion, grander fashion than ever before, still over in right field, three different levels, including a level that's directly on the field. And then a number of other social areas for people to gather. And if you obviously want to come and make the experience a little bit more higher end and have some of the amenities built in, as most people know by now, we've got now 4,000 seats that are premium that comes with some level of amenity associated with them, food and beverage, valet parking, a club access, et cetera. And then obviously some of the other things that are associated close to the ballpark, some of which are attached to the ballpark, a working microbrewery where we'll be brewing three different varietals of beer every day, serving those in the ballpark and around the development. Those are all kind of cool and help with the overall bringing to life the fan experience. So food and beverage is very much enhanced and part of the experience, as are amenities, and as are first and foremost the fact that it's going to be a great place to watch a Braves game.
All right, Derek, sounds exciting. Look, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. Hope to speak to you again in the future, and have a great day.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, guys, the thing I wanted to ask Derek Schiller about the most was the traffic. And he certainly seems confident. And I'm going to take him on his word. I want to believe that those 14 points of ingress and egress will really help. Only time will tell. But they certainly seem confident in it. I'm really not.
Yeah, seems like a lot of hoping.
Yes, I agree. I was glad to hear him. You know, when I asked at the end about, you know, what surprises are still in store and everything, that he was focusing, for the most part, on baseball aspects, like to bring up sight lines, you know, as his first thing. I mean, glad to hear that. Glad that, you know, the kids section wasn't the first thing he mentioned and that baseball sight lines was. Curtis, what stuck out for you?
I saw him speak at a Rotary function, he repeated a lot of the same things, but he was much more human, I guess, in the interview that he did with you, which I like. I mean, it's obvious that they're trying with all their might to make sure that that they do this right. And I think that sometimes as a fan, we kind of blur the lines between what they can do and what they're responsible for and what Cobb County is responsible for. You know, like the pedestrian bridge being delayed, that's not something that's the cause of the Atlanta Braves being incompetent. That's the Cobb County Transit Authority, whoever would be in charge of that, being incompetent. So we need to make sure that we don't lump those two groups together. And I think it will be a really fun place to be. I'm not excited still about them moving out there. And I was just out that way for the first time yesterday with my kids and was stuck in horrible traffic on a Saturday afternoon. So that bodes poorly for a Tuesday afternoon when I'm trying to get to a Braves game, but when there's traffic that would normally be there. But I sincerely believe that they are putting all their efforts into making this really a world-class thing and a really great venue and atmosphere for the fans. And I think that really came through with that interview.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like there's two stories here. There's the experience when you're there, which is, Kurt, a lot of the stuff you just talked about, Steve, the sight lines and the cantilevered upper and middle decks and all that, and the closeness to the field. And then there's the getting to the stadium, which, again, I'll believe it when we see it. I do think, you know, I liked what he said about Henry Aaron and that whole the statue and Hank and sort of the Braves stance on this. I did like that, you know, that it's the Atlanta Braves, and he kept reinforcing that it's still Atlanta. It still says it on the uniform, all that kind of stuff. I didn't love that he's spending 80% of his time looking at 2017. It doesn't bode well for you know, the season that we have ahead of us. I think it's going to be a long season.
It's a bit of a lame duck season.
It is. And, you know, and the countdown and paying the homage to, as he said, to Turner Field with the countdown clock and all that kind of stuff. But
actually, I think that's kind of interesting.
It's kind of interesting. But, you know, I mean, one of the questions I if we'd have more time, I'd like to ask him is, what's the narrative you're selling this year? You know, and I did, like he said, that, you know, he feels a responsibility to educate the fans about Dansby Swanson and maybe some of these players that aren't up here this year and coming. But, you know, I think they're ready. They're looking to 2017. I think Sherholtz is a little bit from Copy as well. So I think it's going to be a long season. I think it's going to be easy to forget that we're in this, you know, year one of a rebuilding project, or maybe year two.
Well, right. Starting over a year ago, it's all been about the future, whether it's the rebuild and the prospects and the move. It has stopped being about the present. And it will be that way until next year. It just will be.
Yeah, it's going to be incredibly difficult to whatever they try and sell this year to sell it.
Unless they do well. You know, I do believe the team will be better. And obviously this will be a subject for another show. But I believe they're going to win more games than they did last year.
Well,
now if it's four more games, does that make a material difference?
Right. And they also say, well, our offense is going to be better. Well, it really almost couldn't be worse.
There's only one direction to go. Yeah.
Yeah. We do have Akbar, though.
We do have Akbar.
Sorry, Stevie. I couldn't let it go.
See, the thing is, if you take Eric and Ibar and you smush them together, you get Akbar.
Nice. Well, and clearly for the Star Wars night, he has to wear a.
Yes, exactly.
Or like those lobster arms or whatever when he's out there playing.
I loved, by the way, and maybe this had come out in prior interviews and I just missed it, but I loved that there were not just one, but two code words for the move to Cobb, and that they thought that they had been breached or whatever, compromised, and they had to come up with a second one. I enjoyed that. All right, guys, so let's move on to our third and final interview of the show. It is General Manager John Coppolella. We are joined by Braves General Manager John Coppolella. John, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
So, John, you've created a great deal of change over the past year and a half. As you head down to spring training this year, which aspect of the team are you most excited about, and what most keeps you up at night?
Well, I've been with the Braves. This will be my 10th spring training, and I have never been this excited for a spring training as far as all the great young players that we have. And it's something where, you know, I think when we're heading down spring training last year, we knew that we'd got a lot of good young players that were going to be a big part of our team in the future. But what's so cool, you know, just with the two major trades we made this past off season, is that we got six players that we could see for the Braves in the 2016 season. So, you know, one, we have a lot of talent. Two, it isn't that far off. I feel like we're a team that's going to keep getting better and better each year. I think we'll be better in 2016 than we were in 2015. I think we're going to keep building year by year until we, you know, reach the goal that we have of trying to bring a second world championship to the city of Atlanta.
So, John, we had John Sherholtz on earlier this week, and I asked him a similar question. His response to what keeps him up at night was that we're not doing it fast enough. Do you share that?
You know, we jumped from 29th in Baseball America prospect rankings to third. We were ranked number one by ESPN, number one by Sporting News. I don't know how much faster we could do it. The jump from 29th to three was the fastest ever. I'm in speed, too. I want it to be quick. I've been a winner my whole life. I don't like losing. Last year in the second half was really tough. At the same time, I don't want to take any shortcuts. And look, John Sherholtz, I think, is the greatest GM of all time. So, you know, what keeps me up at night is that there's more that we could be doing. I mean, I don't sleep because, you know, I always wonder, is there something that we might be missing? We've been the most active team in terms of trades ever since we made this change. We've tried to, you know, there have been a lot of trades we've tried to make that teams weren't put through, whether it was the GM or in a few cases, actually, it was the team's whose team ownership wouldn't do it. But like, that's what keeps me up at night more than anything. It's just that, you know, is this something we might be missing? And, you know, as far as getting it fast, yeah, it'd be great. I want to win too, but I want to get it right.
So, John, of all these prospects that you've acquired, starting back with last offseason, who do you think are the three most likely we might see in the big leagues this season? I'm not counting September call-ups.
Sure. I think in no particular order.
Yeah.
You look at, well, the two names that jump out to me at the start would probably be both Aaron Blair and Malik Smith. They both kind of had the same type of season, spring time between AA and AAA, and they both did really well at both spots. I think we could see them up here. I wouldn't rule them out breaking camp with us. I mean, if they prove they're better than what we have, they could be on a team right out of the gate. But I think that even if they aren't, that they will be up sooner rather than later. As far as the third name, you know, I'd probably say Tyrell Jenkins. I mean, he, you know, had a great year for us last year between AA and AAA. Kind of like Blair, kind of like Malik Smith. Had a little bit less time than they did at AAA, and that's the only reason why I wouldn't put him in the same class. But he's got a world of talent. He's got great makeup, and we're very excited for his future, too.
You know, I've been very excited for Malik Smith and assumed we'd see him this year, and then the Inciarte acquisition happened, and seems like he will be the center fielder this year. I don't know how much you want to tip your hand, but if Malik Smith is on the big club this year, do you know where you put him?
You know, that's, well, first, it's a great problem to have when you have too much talent, when you've got too many guys for one spot. Secondly, it's something we have talked through with Freddie and with our staff. You know, I mean, they may feel like Malik's a really good center field. Ender has a really good arm and right. He could fit there. Maybe you put Nick at left. You put Hector back at third. Maybe they want to put Malik in left and keep Nick in right and keep Ender in center and move Hector back to third. I don't know how it'll shake out, but it'll be a great problem for us to have when it does, and something that we'll certainly talk through.
Yeah, so I'm happy to hear you talk about the possibility of Oliveira going to left when – I'm sorry, going back to third. In January, when the national baseball writers were writing about that the Braves were inquiring on Justin Upton and Yoenis Cespedes, a lot of the analysis was, you know, if that happens, someone like Inciarte or Markakis is going to have to go because Oliveira is in left for the time being. So it's not accurate to say that Oliveira cannot move back to third?
Correct. You know, he will get chances to play third base during spring training. We haven't ruled out third base. We just think that it's something where, you know, it's so hard sometimes for these players to get assimilated to the States. It's not like this is a kid who signed here when he was 16 and he's got 7 or 8 years. We think Hector's going to be a really good hitter. The way we can help that bat is to make things as easy as we possibly can for him. By easier playing left field than is playing third base. So that doesn't mean that he won't ever play third base. And he will play during the spring. There's certainly a chance he could play there during the season.
All right, so staying with bringing in more talent, John, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely do you think it'll be that the Braves will sign Lazarito, the Cuban outfielder, as well as Kevin Maton, who everyone has said the Braves are really focused on?
I wish I could comment on a lot of these players, but the fact that they wouldn't be eligible to sign until July 2nd of 2016 is probably in my best interest and the Braves' best interest not to make any type of call. You know, all I'll say is that I know that we like both players a great deal and that we're going to keep trying to add a lot of young talent.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. I want to talk about the Shelby Miller trade for a minute. I can't think back on any analysis of that trade that I read that didn't include the basic sentiment of amazing job by the Braves, followed by the Diamondbacks gave up too much. And I know that you had publicly stated you guys were not looking to move Shelby, but if you got blown away. So was there a point in the negotiations where you were thinking to yourself, I'm surprised by what they're offering here?
No, I mean, look, Shelby Miller is 24 years old. I think Shelby Miller has a chance to be a true number one ace. 3.02 ERA last year, 205 plus innings. You know, he was a top 10 prospect in the game. He's really good. Arizona got a lot better with that trade in the short run.
Yep.
You know, look, I mean, it's something where we don't know. You know, I mean, we don't know how he'll do over there. We don't know how these kids will do over here. We feel great about what we got back. Otherwise, we would not have made the trade. But I don't feel like they got changed at all. And, you know, frankly, I don't want to make trades where we, you know, like win out and they lose. I mean, I want it to be a win-win trade. I hope that the three players that we got do a great job for the Braves. I hope that Shelby helps Arizona win the NL West.
John, as you're planning for next offseason, are you assuming there's going to be a payroll increase?
Well, I think there will be, just a function of us getting off of a lot of bad contracts. We made a trade last year where we sent Chris Johnson to the Indians to get Nick Swisher and to get Michael Bourne. A big part of that trade was the fact that I freed up money for the 2017 season. I think when you move into a new park, that you end up with a higher payroll. I can't think of teams that moved into a new park and had a lower payroll. I think that we will have that money freed up, but at the same time, I don't think that having money to go buy free agent players is a way that you build championship teams. I think you build it through good young players that come through your own farm system.
And John, I totally agree with that approach, but it's not off the table, right? Like, there's a lot of this young talent coming up, but if this year, you know, fast forwarded a year from now, you know, second base is a bit of a question, third base is a bit of a question, just in terms of the offensive production. A proven free agent could fill some gaps. So you will consider that in 2017.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Look, I mean, you know what? We've said from the start, we're trying it back to the Braves way. We're trying it back to a team that won 14 straight, that went to 5 World Series in 9 years. That when you went to spring training, as I'm on my way there now, you felt like, hey, we have a shot to be in the World Series this year. And if you look at that Braves team, John Schurholz maybe made the best free agent signing ever when he signed Greg Maddux. And, you know, if there's a Greg Maddux type of guy, and, you know, I mean, somebody that fits us that well, that will, you know, have a real impact, that can really help us turn the corner, yeah, we will absolutely try to find that player. At the same time, I didn't see that player in the free agent market this year. I didn't see a contract that made sense for us this year. That's why we, you know, we signed 5 or 6 free agents, but they were more low risk, higher upside type plays, just because it was such a bad market this year.
Yeah, yeah. All right, John, I want to end with this. With all the non-roster invitees that are coming to spring training, who do you think, for the fans, when it's all over, will be the most eye-opening? And I'm not saying, like, who do you think is going to be on the big club this year, but who's going to turn the most heads?
You know what? That's a great question. I think that there are so many players, I think, that will have a lot of great interest to our fans. I think if you talk about Sean Newcomb, he's somebody who's been clocked as high as 100 miles an hour from the left side, 6'5", 240 pounds. I think he's somebody our fans may have heard of but may not know as well as guys like Dansby Swanson, Ozzie Albies. I think Sean has a chance to be as good as he, you know, as he wants to be. I mean, he has a huge upside, and he was a big key to that trade for us. Swanson is somebody that I think our fans are really going to like. I mean, he's a proven winner at every single level. You know, plays a game with great skills, passion, knowledge, energy. I think he's going to be a big anchor for us. Same thing is true of Ozzie Albies. Ozzie, you know, we've had a lot of guys, you know, say he's a lot like young Furcal, leadoff speed, catalyst type guy, switch hit. You know, it's a fun team. It was, you know, as you watch our team in the second half of 2014, I think we led the league in homers, led the league in strikeouts. You know, it was a tough team to watch. It'd be some nights we'd score 12 runs. It'd be some nights we wouldn't score a run for 2 or 3 games. I think what we've tried to really do here is get a lot of players that, you know, are more well-rounded, that are just bring more to the table as far as speed, versatility, and just fit into a more NL-type team. You know, you've seen teams like the Royals and the Giants win really four of the last six World Series, and they have built around players like these, and that's what we're trying to get back to.
Well, John, I'm very excited about spring training and to sort of see all the storylines play out and see how this 2016 plays out. It's an exciting time. John, thank you again for your time. We really appreciate it. Have a good spring training and 2016, and we hope to speak with you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Same here.
All right, so Hammy, what'd you take away from the interview with Coppy?
I liked it. I found that I liked him more. Just because you read everything and then getting to sort of hear him and have him on our show, I just liked him. He seemed more human. I did like that he to tie it back to the Schuerholz interview, and Steve, you mentioned this, but you know, what kept Schuerholz up at night was that we're not moving fast enough. And Coppy's like, "Wait, we're not moving fast enough? Come on, what do you want?" I mean, I sort of like that.
Yeah, it was interesting,
but I like that edge to him. You know, I think he's a little bit more unfiltered. You know, I mean, Schuerholz was so polished.
He was polished in '92.
Yeah, and Schiller obviously as well. I mean, he's a PR guy, so that's his job. But I just sort of like that Coppy was a little bit more unfiltered, and just relatable. And I liked everything that he had to say. You know, I liked that he was honest about not wanting to talk too much about the guys coming out of that international draft or whichever part of that, you know, he was talking about. And I liked what he had to say about Newcomb, Aaron Blair. I mean, I just think that. It got me excited about the future of the Braves. Obviously not 2016, but hearing him talk, I bought into it, I would
say. Yeah, I was very happy to hear him, you know, when I talked about, well, so what do you do with Malik Smith? And all the permutations he described ended with moving Oliveira back to third. Mm-hmm. Right, because it was all about, you know, maybe Nick goes to left and Malik is right and all that stuff. I was glad because, my God, what you've read and what you've seen lately was that we just cannot put Oliveira back at third. He won't be able to hit, or we're worried about his fielding or whatever. I'm glad to hear him say that, yeah, I mean, Oliveira can go back to third and that he will get some time at third in the spring.
Do you guys get – I mean, am I the one missing that by putting him in outfield gives him a better chance at hitting? What's the logic there?
The point is – well, so, you know, at FanFest, when I was in the roundtable session, I asked that question, and Freddie Gonzalez took it. And he went on about – he said, you know what makes a great left fielder? A guy that can hit. We want him to just focus solely on hitting. The implication being third is harder than left, and third is harder than left,
sure.
Right? So, yeah, it's all about we want to keep it as simple as possible so that he can be the hitter that we need him to be. I mean, Schuerholz even – I wrote this down after listening to it again. Schuerholz said when talking about the team will be better this year, he said Oliveira is a key, and it's true. I mean, they need Oliveira to be a good – bat in that fifth spot. So yeah, it's all about just simplifying for him.
Got it. I mean, I also liked, and Curtis will let you go, but I like that, and we talked about this earlier, that his statement, you know, you don't build good teams by just signing pricey free agents, right? And it's a departure from the Frank Wren era, which we knew was coming, but that he's not just going to foolishly spend money on a free agent just to do it or to make a splash or something, that he's going to stick to the core of this. Which is good. It makes me feel a little bit more secure that we don't have a BJ or an Uglas signing in our future.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly the MO that they are going away from after the firing of Wren. I mean, Schuerholz said it, that, you know, they got away from building the pipeline and relying too much on major league ready talent. And Coppy certainly seemed to echo that statement. I mean, you know, when I was pressing him because I was really like, into the ground, man.
Totally.
When I said, but look, you know, if there's a gap that can be filled with a free agent, and he was like, yeah, of course, if there's a great free agent out there, we would get him. His example of the great free agent being Greg Maddux, well, of course, except we're not that team anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We are never going to sign David Price or Zach Greinke.
Who was the comparable Greg Maddux of right now? I mean,
right, exactly.
And he said he didn't like, which I appreciate. He's like, I didn't like this free agent class, and I don't know if I like the free agent class for next year. You know, there's not a great one.
Just talking about this year. I don't know that he was talking about next year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got his answers on the Shelby trade, and you know, you don't want to be lopsided, and I understood him talking up Shelby and all that stuff, but still not 100% accurate. They had to have been somewhat surprised.
Yeah, but you don't want to.
No, of course he couldn't say it.
I mean, yeah, and then Arizona never calls him again because he's
trashing him.
He's trashing him. He just wants to, you know, keep it sort of cool.
The other thing is, I also wonder where would we be right now if the last move that he had made was the Andrelton-Simmons move.
Yeah, if the Shelby – well, we know exactly where we would have been. We were distraught after that move. And, you know, but that the Shelby move turned everything around for us.
Oh, sure. No, and what I'm saying is, like, where – you know, like, would he be more defensive because he sees all this as a process, which obviously it is. But, I mean, after the Oliveira trade and then the – Simmons trade, those are two still, I would say, pretty unpopular trades. Whether you believe what we got back makes us a better long-term team or whatever, but I'm just kind of curious as to we've allowed this conversation to become much brighter because of the return we got from the Shelby Miller trade. And it is, I mean, there's no doubt about that because of the return we got from Shelby Miller, but you know, where would collectively would we be pretty dark right now if that trade had never happened?
Or
if he had gotten a great return for Shelby Miller?
Yeah, there's no doubt that Shelby Miller trade turned everything around for me in terms of my excitement about the team. Now, the excitement would have come, whatever, and maybe halfway through the season, we're getting close to 17, but that Shelby move just changed everything for me.
Yeah, I mean, that everything up to before that was the bottom, and then that was the sort of the move back up towards something I could be excited about. Totally agree.
Well, and I'm also, one last thing for me is that I'm excited that maybe they're not going to start moving out pieces. Because I've talked about this for a while, that I'm always worried that, you know, you keep Tommy Hansen and you move Adam Wainwright, you know, and that we would see that happen again. And because who knows, you know, I mean, again, these guys are prospects and you can view them as much as you want. And obviously Tommy Hansen became a highly prized prospect. But like that they're going to keep these guys. It doesn't sound like they're going to be in the market for maybe shipping a bunch of guys off to fill in pieces because they feel like some of these guys are so close and a bunch of these guys are so close that maybe they want to ride out with the talent they've got in house and see how far that gets them before they really start thinking about bringing in other pieces.
Yeah, I think a combination of the payroll restrictions and the philosophy of building from within that they're not going to – there will be no more Teixeira trades. There will be no more just shipping out five guys from one guy. I just don't think – this front office is going to do that. All right, guys, that is the show. We will be back periodically over the next few weeks, and then we'll start back up weekly by mid-March for the new season. So please, everyone, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Let's get your dog subscribed. As well as iTunes or Stitcher, so that you don't miss any of our shows. And as always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.